You are now listening to the Mike Rosato Podcast.
Hey, what's up, what's up, what's up? This is going to be my first podcast of this awesome journey that I've been taking in regards to leadership. Initially, the reason I did this was because I wanted to impart culture and leadership to our core team or our staff, and wanted to spend more of our face-to-face time dialoguing as opposed to me sitting up there teaching. So I decided to do this podcast, as well as it's primarily for our core team, but for anyone else who wants to hear it and you want to join on this journey of tapping into this big skull of mine and seeing what I've learned along the way, by all means, I do not consider myself an expert. However, I am confident in the things that I've been learning and am continue learning throughout this process. And so I want to be able to share that. In this episode today, what I want to do is I want to discuss the topic of, as a leader, you're being questioned, or your decisions are being questioned, or people are asking questions. And first and foremost, I want to say that it's an honor to lead people. I'm trying to mean that more and more each day. It's an honor just to be a part of all this. It feels amazing when you lead someone and you give them advice. It's an amazing feeling to see someone follow your lead into being a better disciple or a better leader. To see them take your advice with no hesitation and be successful is so internally rewarding. But as a pastor, I must admit that sometimes sheep bite, and as we're shepherding people, we're going to have sheep that will end up biting the hand that feeds them. So sometimes that happens, or sometimes when you make a decision, people have legit questions and we have to be able to answer them. Or sometimes people just don't want to be led in whatever direction you're leading them. So you have all these different aspects that you face when you're making decisions, you're trying to drive the vision. And I've watched a lot of leaders when it comes to people questioning them or people asking questions. I watch a lot of leaders either evolve in their leadership to become very passive. They become a doormat. I've watched other leaders go to the opposite extreme and they become a frustrated jerk. Or the worst thing that I've seen in regards to leadership is that they end up just quitting, which is sad because they buck under the pressure of the crowd. And as I continue to evolve in my own leadership, I'm noticing more and more that with every new level comes tougher decisions that you need to make. And that's what makes decisions tough, is listening to the crowd, hearing what they say. And at times your calling even will be tested because of the crowd. And if you handle it well, and if you handle it with health, this will help you lead from a place of conviction rather than a place of frustration. Here's the big news. Here's the thing that's going to pop your bubble, and something that I got to remind myself constantly, and it's this. Not everyone will like you. That's key. Not everyone will like you. Jesus warned us about this, but yet there's something internally inside each and every one of us that we desire to be liked, and we desire to be the cool guy and the person that everybody looks up to, but not everyone's going to like us, and we need to be okay. We need to find confidence in our leadership. And I've said this before. I've quoted this. I believe this originated from Craig Groeschel, but he says that people don't follow leaders who are always right. They follow leaders that are always real, which is true. But there are moments where what if the real me feels that I'm also right at the same time? So that creates a tension, right? So if you're a person that likes to take notes during podcasts, or for now, take a mental note, there's this tension that I want to talk about. There's a tension of the fact that if you're an honest, humble leader, you know that you're not perfect, that you will have blind spots, and that you need to be a good listener, because good leaders are good listeners. So I'm not perfect and I have blind spots. Versus, so here's the other side of that tension, is that when it comes to decisions, you could confidently look at yourself in the mirror and say, I have thought through all of the angles that I possibly could in regards to this issue. I also know that I can't please everyone. And I also know that I'm confident in where we're going. All right, that's why people follow you. That's why people are attracted to you because you're a leader that knows where you want to go. Okay, so there's that tension. You know you're not perfect, and you're confident in the fact that you know you're not perfect and that you do have blind spots. So you want to welcome people coming alongside of you and saying certain things and voicing certain concerns. But then there's another side of you that's like, you're confident in where you're going. We read this in the Bible a lot when it comes to the concept of having a multitude of counselors. You know, Proverbs 11:14, it says, where there is no counsel, the people fall. But in the multitude of counselors, there is safety. It says it again in Proverbs 15:22. It says, without counsel, plans go awry. But in the multitude of counselors, they are established. So again, multitude of counselors have safety. Multitude of counselors, we're established. We have security. We have stability. And then Proverbs 24:6 says, for by wise counsel, you will wage your own war. And in a multitude of counselors, again, there is safety. So I've derived this throughout the last 16 years of ministry, and also what I feel like God's putting on our hearts as we continue to go to the next level. And it's this. It says, in a multitude, so write this down. In a multitude of counselors, there is security, stability, and safety. But in the counsel of the multitude, there is division, delusion, and danger, which is completely different. Did you get that? There's a multitude of counselors, but there's also the counsel of the multitude. So in a multitude of counselors, there is security, stability, and safety. That's what we read from Scripture. But in the counsel of the multitude, there is division, delusion, and danger. We experience this constantly. And if you haven't experienced it, then you're really not sticking your neck out enough for the vision. Because when you do that, we get these moments where people will come up to you and when they will ask you for your ear. And I've learned that when earlier on in leadership, what I would do is I would stick to my decisions. I would stick to my convictions, but I would give off the appearance or the perception that, yeah, I'm listening to you and I'm abiding by what you're saying. And what happens is that when I don't correct it, when I don't make that adjustment, they'll come back and think that they'll always have my ear. And then I've given them permission. I've given them the license to continue questioning decisions, because there's a big difference between someone asking you a question and someone questioning your decision. So don't make the mistake of not nipping it in the bud in love. Okay, so to love them is to lead them. Okay, but if you give them the impression that they can question you into their desired direction, it will bite you in the butt later on. We want to be an open book culture. I never want to be a leader that doesn't lead out of integrity, meaning that someone could look at our books, someone could look at our bank account, someone could look at our calendar, our meeting minutes. I want to always be an open book culture. However, not everything is an open meeting. I really, really desire in my life to have God appoint things. I don't want people to vote in things. Because what we've all learned is that sometimes the majority vote isn't always the right thing, isn't always the healthy thing. And, you know, that kind of culture will allow us to lead in confidence, lead in conviction, and not cater to the votes of the crowd. Cultures like this tend to attract people who constantly will question your motives. They'll constantly compare you to their past. And eventually what you're going to do is you're just going to openly invite a culture of criticism if you allow people to continue to question decisions. But again, we do want to be an open book. So let me identify the difference. We want to have counsel in our lives, and want to have multitude of counselors, but we don't want the counsel of the multitude. So what's bad about the counsel of the multitude? Well, I'm glad you asked. The first thing that's bad about the counsel of the multitude is just that it's only coming from one angle. Sometimes people will come to you with their filtered selfishness. Okay, so they're only coming from one angle. They're not generally selfish people, but in those moments when they're coming to you, at times, it's one-sided. I'm reminded of this. I was watching this video clip on Facebook where it was a painter on some kind of talent show. And as he's painting, the judges start getting bored of what he's painting, because obviously from a distance, it just looks like he's just splatting paint onto the canvas. And then one of the judges X him out, and it's kind of beginning to look like it's going to be anticlimactic. And then all of a sudden, the music stops, it ends, and the painter turns the canvas upside down, and then the crowd erupts in applause because the painting is beautiful. But the crowd and the judges did not know what he was painting because they weren't looking at it the way the painter was looking at it. As leaders, we are looking at things the way we're looking at it. We're looking at things in many different angles. We know where we're going. We know where we're painting this picture. And at times, people will X you out. They will vote against you. They will stand in silence because they just don't have your angle. And as a good leader, as a good shepherd, as a good pastor, what we're trying to do is we're trying to look at all the angles. We're trying to look at the big angle of taking care of every individual that's out there. In future podcasts, I'm going to talk about there are leaders who are creators, and then there are leaders who are curators, and then there are leaders who are collaborators, and then there are leaders who are conformers. And I'm more of a creator of things. And at times I could explain the vision, but it takes a while for people to catch it because they're more conformers. They have to see it. They have to live in it. It has to be tangible for them in order for them to get it. So I can't trust them with the decisions because they don't see the end result. They don't see the painting that I'm painting. So at times people will come with their own questions about, you know, silly things, you know, like even your decisions about what time do you have meetings and your decisions about, you know, how you're going about certain things, who you're empowering, those kind of things. They're coming from one angle and not a big angle. Stay with the big angle. That's the problem with the Council of the Multitude. The second thing is that it's impossible for them to carry the same weight as responsibility as you do. They will offer their advice, but at the end of the day, if this fails, their life continues on. You know, if this doesn't work right, you know, they move on. They can move on to the next thing. But as you're leading, as you're shepherding, as you're caring for other people, it's hard because they're not going to carry the same weight of responsibility as you do. So to abide by their counsel, it gets a little sticky because at the end of the day, they're not the ones that are going to be holding this thing together. You are. Number three, the Council of the Multitude. Know this, that they seek comfort while you're pursuing the vision. They seek comfort while you're pursuing the vision. Any good leader knows that vision is frustrating, all right? Vision will frustrate your present because vision is a perceived picture of what's to come. It's not here yet. So your present's always going to stay frustrated. So it's very rare that the multitude is going to take that same risk that you're willing to take because you're pursuing the vision. They're seeking comfort. They're looking at right now. They're not looking at 3 years from now. They're not looking at 5 years from now. They're not looking necessarily at leaving a legacy. You could impart that and you could grow that and you could influence that. But initially, they're seeking comfort. All right. So that's the problem with the Council of the Multitude. Number four, the problem with the Council of the Multitude is that they lack experience. And maturity matters when you're making decisions. And these guys need to, again, see the vision. They need to see beyond the moment. All right. So when they lack experience, it's really easy. It's really easy to throw a simple solution to a complex problem. And I try to express that to people so many times, but some of them just don't get it. And people who are called and people who are leaders called by God, you'll get this. You'll understand this, that you're, as you're moving and grooving, as you're developing your experience, maturity matters when you're making these decisions, and you need to see beyond the moment. Now, this is what good. So I talked about what the Council of the Multitude represents, but what about a multitude of counselors? Let me talk to you what a good counselor is. A good counselor, number one, is someone who gives you counsel based on truth, okay? So when I say truth, I mean scripture. I mean that they're ready to give you your true blind spots. They're based on truth. So if it's based on truth, the Bible says the truth sets you free. So they promote healing. So that's good counsel. Good counsel is based on truth, not opinions, not preferences, not what the current state of certain things and the circumstances and the environment. No, it's based on some solid, unchanging truth. That's what good counsel represents. Number two, believe it or not, this is going to sound really, really selfish, but this is the truth. Good counsel, good counselors, they're concerned about you and your family, and that here's another good part, that they're not afraid of you, all right? People who aren't necessarily concerned about you or care deeply for you, they're going to most likely be yes people because they're afraid of conflict. If they're not concerned about you, or they might be the people that like make you work 80 hours a week. You know, sometimes, you know, I tell people I can't counsel you during this time and this time because this is family time. And to them, they're like, well, you know, that decision doesn't benefit me. Well, it benefits me. And again, that sounds selfish, but I liken it to the whole concept of, you know, when you're in an airplane and the stewardess is giving you those safety tips, what do they tell parents? They tell parents, put on the oxygen mask first before you put on your child. Why? Because if I'm barely holding on, I'm not going to be able to serve my child in that emergency moment. And that's the same thing in regards to leadership. You know, people will have you go have meetings every night of the week. But you know what? Eventually, what's going to happen is that you're not going to be able to give the best version of you. So good counsel is concerned about you. As you're concerned about everyone else, a good counselor is concerned about you. Number three, a good counselor realizes that things are unavoidable. They realize that at times there are certain decisions that aren't going to be a win-win. There are certain decisions that aren't going to please everyone. And I believe that's wise counsel. It's not to go in saying, okay, how are we going to make everyone happy? That's not the goal. Kudos if that does happen, but that's not the goal, because you know, a good counselor knows that that's impossible. So they realize that certain things are just unavoidable. So if they're unavoidable, let's not try to make magic happen here, but let's just go by the truth, and let's go by concern about you and what does God want, and et cetera, et cetera. You get that? Number four, good counsel carries this with you. That's another problem with the counsel of the multitude. I have a really hard time, and maybe I'm wrong. I will openly admit this on podcast. Maybe I'm wrong about this, but I have a hard time receiving counsel from lazy people. they could be right, but the fact that they're not owning it with me, it makes it a lot difficult because it's really easy to be the couch coach and to yell at the TV screen and tell a running back what to do and tell a coach how to coach and tell players how to play, and I want somebody in the game with me. And so I believe that good counselors, they carry this with me. Even if, you know, some of my friends that are good counselors, they might not be physically here with me in New Jersey, but they emotionally carry it with me. And that means the world to me. And I know that it's good counsel. So the remedy, so we have this tension between the counselors and the counsel of the multitude. So what do we do? So I didn't want to leave you with just all the negative stuff. Here's some positive stuff. Here's the remedy. Here's your homework assignment here. Number one is this. Know your counselors, okay? If you're listening to me right now, you need to at least have three people that you could text, direct message, or pick up the phone and call, or meet up at Starbucks, or meet up and grab a beer that you could confide in, that they won't judge you, that they will challenge you and not reject you. You got to identify those counselors. And again, going back, what a good counselor, someone who's going to tell you the truth, that's concerned about you, that realizes that things are unavoidable, and then that carries this with you. You have to at least have three. If you don't have three, that's not a multitude of counselors, all right? You need to at least have three. So I'm hoping that myself, that I established so much trust and relationship with my core team, that I could be at least one of your three, that you could come to me and say, here's what the problems that I'm dealing with. And, you know, I need to see beyond, you know, this and that. And there are people complaining, and those counselors need to help you rise up over the complaints so you can get clarity over the situation. Know your counselors. Number two, and this is a big one, don't just inform people, influence them. Don't just inform people, influence them. At times, I even struggle with this. I just want to give people information and have them just trust my leadership. But again, that separates you being a passive doormat and a frustrated jerk when it comes to your leadership. Don't just inform people, you have to influence them, okay? Because bottom line, sometimes you can't give people all the information that they want. They're not ready for that, all right? And again, what I said earlier, it's really easy to offer solutions to a problem you know very little about. There's no such thing as a simple solution to a complex problem, okay? And at times, I can't give people all the information. You know, when people complain about releasing people or shifting a leader from one position to the next, I had this happen so many times, especially dealing with volunteers. You know, people are like, well, why? And you give them kind of like a beat around the bush answer. And I found myself, you know what, let me not do that, because eventually they're going to read between the lines. What I want to do is I want to influence them. I want to influence them from a place of relationship, from a place of trust. I want to build their confidence so that they could fill in all the gaps of communication with trust and confidence in me. So I need to lean on the influence in building those relationships, because at times I can't give them information. I can't tell them that that previous leader sucked at their job. All right. I can't tell them that this person morally fell in regards to their character. I can't tell them that stuff. It's not for me to put somebody else on blast. It's not for me to tell somebody else's business. So they can't handle all that information. So therefore, I just kind of got rid of just the goal of being information. Forget information. I don't want to just inform people. I want to influence them and let them know that I am a trustworthy leader, that I'm with every mineral of my being and in my best way, I'm trying to lead with integrity. So that requires you to influence them. And again, influence comes from relationship, trust, and confidence. Number three, serve people, not their present problems. Serve people, not their present problems. What a big point that is. We're called to serve people. But at times, we confuse serving people and also serving their problems and trying to fix their problems. Big news, leader, you are not their Messiah, Jesus is, okay? And as you serve people, if you serve their present problems, you're going to lead more from a standpoint of avoiding pain and discomfort rather than helping them reach their goals. Did you get that, people? If you serve their present problems, you're going to lead more from a standpoint of avoiding pain and discomfort rather than helping them reach their goals. I want to serve you. And I'm going to serve you sometimes with loving conflict. I'm going to serve you sometimes with loving challenge. Sometimes I'm going to serve you sometimes with just a pleasant, hey, listen, can you just trust me here? I'm going to be honest with you. I can't give you all the information, but I promise you that I'm trying to do my best and do it all in integrity, and I have people around me that are holding me accountable, but at the end of the day, I want to serve you to my best ability. I'm not going to serve your problem. And I think that's when I've watched leaders get to the place where they become so passive and they treat everybody as they're so fragile, and oh my gosh, what if they leave the church? What if they leave the faith? What if they do this? What if they do that? And it will force you into making fear-based decisions. And we all know, if you've been around the block long enough, fear is not of God. God did not give you a spirit of fear, but a spirit of power, love, and of a sound mind. So serve people, not the problem. Last thing I'm going to hit you up with is this. When God talks to you in prayer, now, there's a prerequisite to this point. When God talks to you in prayer, that means you have to actually pray. Now, listen, if you're a good leader, you will always feel like you're not praying enough, okay? I will always feel that I do not pray enough. But you know the difference between not praying enough and not praying at all, okay? So that means you have to pray. So back to the point, when God talks to you in prayer, don't get talked out of it by man. When God talks to you in prayer, don't get talked out of it by man. You go to God. You're fasting. You got an unction from the Holy Spirit. You have a conviction to lead a certain way. He gave you a picture of this. You know it. He's given you a dream. You know it. You don't know how many times in my life and in some big leaders' lives that I have around me that I've watched God give people a dream and have man try to talk them right out of it. There are times where we need to say thank you, but no thank you. I know what I heard from God, and I'm just going to stick to it. And if I fail, then I fail trying to listen to God. I'm not going to fail trying to please people. I've learned this the hard way, that when your goal is to please God, sometimes you will end up displeasing people. But when your goal is to please people, you will always displease God. Can I say that again? When your goal is to please God, sometimes you will displease people. But when your goal is to please people, you will always displease God. Make the decisions. And you know what? There are certain decisions that aren't necessarily right or wrong decisions. They're just decisions that you've made that they were the wisest decision that you can make at the time. You know, again, maybe it's something as silly as a time you set for a meeting, or a decision about a direction that you're taking your small group or your discipleship group, you know, a direction that you're taking the worship team, songs that you picked. They're not necessarily right or wrong, but they're decisions that you made, and you tried your best to make the best decision possible. Go with that decision. I learned way more by sticking to confident decisions than I do making fear-based decisions. Decisions based off the crowd. Decisions based off general consensus. If you're gonna learn, let's learn. If you're gonna learn from failure, why not fail trying to hear God's voice, trying to listen to wise counsel, a multitude of wise counselors. Learn from that way. Don't learn from fear-based decisions because you're trying to listen to the crowd. So yes, as a leader, people will ask you questions, or they will in fact even question your leadership. But guess what? Lead in confidence. Lead in confidence. And I guarantee you, God can use that way more than fear. Well, I hope you enjoyed today's podcast. Hey, make sure you subscribe to this and check out next month's podcast as I talk about how to create, curate, collaborate, and conform. Talk to you soon.